You all right?
I'm fine.
You seem far away.
We linked.
I see.
There's nothing to worry about. He's not a founder. He's not trying to lure me to the Dominion. The link is part of what we are. It comes as naturally to us as talking does to humanoids.
It's a little more personal than talking, isn't it?
I suppose.
Transfer complete.
Hello, and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, emerging from his natural liquid form into solid state.
And this week, for our conundrum, we're going to talk about the evolution of Odo.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a few minutes, of course, because I think what happened, Cam, is Renée Auberjonois passed away earlier this year, and just it was unfortunate timing. We were able to dedicate an entire episode to the memory of Aaron Eisenberg, but because of the Star Trek Picard coverage, we couldn't do the same with Renée Auberjonois. But we did dedicate, you know, a bit of it about our own memories about him at the convention and why he was such a beloved character. And we did do a video on YouTube as well. But I think we really want to give it, you know, a full hour to really embrace this character and talk about why he is such an amazing and unique character within the realm of Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, Odo feels like a character that it doesn't make sense why we hadn't done an episode on him, considering how much we talk about Deep Space Nine, and he is so crucial, and he really is in many ways the heart of that show. So I'm looking forward to diving into Odo.
Heart of that show? Heart of stone. Before we get in there, why don't we just cover this? We had the virtual San Diego Comic-Con with the Star Trek Universe panel. No fans call it Star Trek Universe, but okay. There's some things to dive into. Cam, we actually said, why don't we kick it off with the Discovery stuff? Because we suggested a few weeks ago that if you wanted to get, you know, all these Star Trek casts reunited, why don't you do a table read of an episode? Discovery, literally a week later, if like less, they came out and said that they are going to do a table read episode as part of Comic-Con. Cam, what did you think of their episode choice, Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2?
Well, okay, I can appreciate one thing, and that is that with the number of guests they had on this virtual convention, you know, I mean, they had all these, you know, obviously the crew of the Enterprise and Michelle Yeoh and all that, like they had to give all of them something to do. And so I feel like they really were pinned down by choices, but Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2 is a really crappy table read episode. And like, I didn't watch the entire thing, but I did watch, you know, pieces of it. And a lot of it was people saying like one or two words, like Michael, run, you know, that sort of stuff. It's an action based episode.
Exactly. So it like, we were enthralled when we watched it at the time, but I think that had more to do with the directing and the back and forth you get from some cool character moments, but where it's just kind of, you're watching it on Zoom, that energy just is not there, and it does not translate well into a table read over Zoom.
To workshop their idea, should they have maybe done scenes, picked out some key scenes from season two that involved, you know, you could have the scene between, you know, Rebecca Romijn's number one and Anson Mount, the first time she shows up on the show. You could work in the Georgiou moment with Burnham. You could kind of pick and choose your scenes based on the strengths of moments that would allow the actors to have fun.
I guess so, but let me ask you this. What's even the point of this exercise? If they're going to do scenes, if it's come to the point that they're doing just scenes, bits here and there, who cares? Like, why does anyone want to watch this?
Well, I can appreciate they want to do something a little bit different and a little special for a convention panel, because a lot of those panels, if they're moderated in a boring way, aren't really that memorable. So they were trying to do something. But yeah, I would say I can appreciate the thought, but the execution left a lot to be desired.
We watched The Community, the sitcom that aired a few years ago on NBC, and don't forget Yahoo Screen. Maybe Star Trek could have made its way to Yahoo Screen if that stayed in business, but Community did a table read. We loved it. It was amazing, and I wonder, what is it about that works? Is it just that it's so dialogue-heavy, you get the character moments versus how VFX-dependent an episode like this is?
Well, it's that, but also, I mean, how many people were on that Zoom session doing that Community read?
Like, yeah, there's probably like eight.
Yeah, eight max.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, Discovery, how many were there? It's like
20.
Yeah, exactly. It was like they had everyone.
So we weren't fans of that. One of the things that we did, I think, enjoy a little bit more, though, at least I did, was the opening scene that they showcased for us for Star Trek Lower Decks. I guess we only have a few weeks to go now. I'm getting excited. For me, it was just nice to see how a scene would play out in normal pacing. I'm not sitting there guffawing at the stuff, but I get what the tone is of the show. And for me, what I think I'm going to be liking about the show is kind of the hangout factor with these characters. There's not too many shows that I laugh my butt off when I watch. Community notwithstanding, but I like the vibe. I like the tone so far. Time will tell if it can hold up for a full 22, 23 minutes. But so far, yeah, I'm digging what they're selling.
Yeah, I didn't watch the scene. I am really anti-watching scenes in advance. This goes all the way back to 2007. I remember I watched a scene that they released early for Spider-Man 3. And I remember when I got to that scene in the theater, I was like, yeah, keep going. I've seen this. So I purposely have never watched another one again.
Yeah, well, I think that the smart thing that they did is it's the opening scene. So it's not like it's in the middle of the episode or anything like that. And I think that kind of makes sense. But there's a couple shout outs. I won't spoil anything for you or for listeners of the show. But they're already doing a couple like fun shout outs to the universe just within the first 2 minutes of that. Mm-hmm. So just with the Lower Decks stuff, they had a panel that followed and you got all the voice actors. I don't really recall anything of great, you know, importance emerging from this, because what they did though is, okay, so this panel was like edited, and it was actually edited in a very jarring fashion. Like you could tell that they cut out a lot and people just jump randomly to other topics. So you actually had it at the point where like they literally just had this bumper warning cover people's mouths, and they would blank out stuff that the character or the voice actors were saying. So like nothing very interesting came out of it other than people just saying like, my character is a gruff Bajoran, like that sort of stuff. I'm just kind of like, okay. I just kind of shrugged. Like the panel wasn't very interesting to me.
These panels that happen before a show has gone to air are often pretty thin because they just don't want to say anything in today's spoiler culture.
Well, the Star Trek Picard panel that also ran, that was pretty thin too. They're like, it was really just the cast talking about how much they love Patrick Stewart. And it had a lot of Marina Sirtis, who is also in that panel. She kept chiming in, telling these actors, don't let his ego get that big. We had to work on him a long time to get him to where he is right now. That was amusing to me, but I don't know. I didn't really take away anything interesting from the Picard panel either. There's no real insights that I drew from that. I was kind of like, I don't know, just left shrugging my shoulders.
Yeah, and there's nothing they can really say about a potential, well, not potential, but they can't really say much about a season two, because given the pandemic, who knows when that's going to go, you know, and shoot. So, it's kind of in a weird standstill at the moment.
Yeah, if they're still writing these episodes, look, the actors are going to be the last people to read the script, essentially. So it's kind of like they have nothing to say. There was some stuff at the top, though. Maybe we should have started with this. But Alex Kurtzman revealed that the first 10 episodes of Strange New Worlds have been broken. For those that don't know, it's essentially where writers kind of go beat by beat before they actually write all the dialogue within the script. That is much further along than I suspected. They've already broken 10 episodes. It confirms that there will be at least 10 episodes, maybe more. So give them props for, I guess, keeping this under their hat. But let's be honest, fans have been begging for this Pike spinoff for about a year now. So maybe no surprise that they've got lots of story ideas already in the can.
Well, it wouldn't shock me if this show was in the works long before we knew about it, and things were at least being brainstormed.
Yeah, so. Kurtzman did confirm like they had been thinking about it for about a year. So
yeah.
So I guess at this point, I'm that much more excited. But guess what? The actors, they really couldn't share anything of interest with regards to the future. Just a lot of these kind of platitudes, like it's such an amazing franchise to be part of. I really can't wait to see where my character goes from here. So, yeah, you got that. One other piece of news. We got the name for the new Nickelodeon kids-oriented Star Trek cartoon. It is going to officially be Star Trek Prodigy. Cam, what do you think of this title?
This was the most exciting news of the day.
It was,
to come out
yes.
of this con for me. They put up on Instagram a really flashy motion graphic, basically, of the title. Star Trek Prodigy, I like it. It's not what I ever would have thought of. I'm actually a little bit surprised they went with the word prodigy just at a kid's show. I mean, yeah, you can have a child prodigy, but I wonder if that's a word that would translate to maybe a child audience. So, I mean, I give them points for not talking down. And I'm really, really intrigued to see where this goes. The motion graphic they put up of the title, the short video on Instagram, it was very colorful and vibrant. And I'm hoping to see that translated to the animation, you know, to the show. It'll be a while before we find out, but I'm really, really hopeful for this because I really do enjoy the original animated series of Star Trek, which told very, you know, tight, well-written science fiction stories aimed at a younger audience. And I want to see that sort of thing continue into Prodigy.
But do you think it's kind of weird, though, that you're going to have a Star Trek series centered completely on a electronic music band from England?
They finally got my letters.
Wow. Okay. So the Prodigy, you finally got your own Star Trek series.
They were going to call it Star Trek Firestarter, but you know.
I thought it was going to be maybe Star Trek Primal Scream, but I guess they're from Scotland, I think. So I like the title. I think it's a great title. I think, you know, I've only ever heard of child prodigies myself, so it makes sense, you know.
Yeah.
Going with kind of the kids-oriented sort of stuff. And look, I remember being a kid and learning new words all the time. I think that's great. You and I, we're going back and forth a little bit on WhatsApp. Star Trek fans, we love to kind of like delineate these kind of like three-letter kind of designations for Star Trek shows. TNG, TOS, DS9, VOI, ENT, DSC, STP. But can there be two STPs, Cam, if there's Star Trek Picard and Star Trek Prodigy? What do you think the three-letter sort of thing is going to be?
I mean, I'm going to go with Pro. I think that's the one that looks the best. It looks most distinct when you write that out. Like, there's no other show you could mistake if it's just P-R-O. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't think that's what it's going to go by, though.
Okay.
I think your biggest chance is either PRD or PDG. I think PDG actually kind of makes a lot of sense, but you know how like people are trying to get DIS going for Discovery?
Yeah.
And people just inevitably fell on DSC. So I think PDG, it might make the most sense, but I think it's either... Like, I don't know if Pro is going to be the one, even though I totally get what you're saying, because you have VOI, you have ENT, so why not Pro, right?
Yeah, and also, if you put PRD, that sounds too much like Picard.
And I did mention that in WhatsApp as well, and so that's why I eventually thought maybe PDG might be the one that makes most sense. I guess fans will inevitably decide what it's going to be on their own in the coming months, so we'll just have to wait and see what the ultimate decision is.
This is the sort of thing that we all wait to find out.
I'm on tenterhooks. Yeah.
Oh, I feel like the Discovery one is still not settled. Like, yes, DSC is the official, but so many people just refer to it as Disco.
No, but you know, it is DSC though. Like that's what it has been settled though. Like I know what you're saying. Like people call it Disco as fun, but like you know, people don't call it DIS. That one kind of got shoved to the side. If you're on, say, Memory Alpha, for example, it doesn't go by Disco. It is DSC. Yeah.
If you're in conversation, what do you refer to it as?
Discovery.
But if you were to do an abbreviated version of the title?
I never would, though. Have you ever heard me call it DSC?
No, I think I've said disco, though.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure I have, yeah.
Have you ever heard me call it disco?
No, now that I think about it, no.
I haven't. But I've heard you call it disco, so.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the thing is, like, we're not talking about, like, five-letter designations, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Every single example we're talking about is three-letter designations. So there's got to be a three-letter designation for Prodigy. I think Pro makes sense. But we'll see if maybe it's PDG or PRD. I think those are contenders as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be really interesting as, you know, the Kurtzman era continues to roll on and crank out 17 shows every 2 years, like whether it's just going to become an enormous jumble of acronyms that none of us can keep straight.
Star Trek, Dislocated. That'll have to fight Discovery for the DSC. Maybe that's where we get DIS going.
I guess we can take comfort in knowing the Section 31 one is pretty obvious.
Not to me. mind you, Cam, any Section 31 news out today?
Do you think this show's happening?
No, nobody wants it. Like, no fans are craving a Section 31 spinoff starring Ash Tyler. Like, I'm just like it's getting zero traction. All fans were doing were like calling for a Pike spinoff. I think Emperor Giorgio was a lot of fun. I think Michelle Yeoh is awesome. I totally like watch her in anything. I just don't think a Section 31 spinoff is going to be the right vehicle for Star Trek, period.
I'm not crazy about just taking popular characters and throwing them into spinoffs. I know that's been a huge success formula over the history of the television industry as well as
maybe
the film industry.
That's why they're taking an unpopular character like Ash Tyler and throwing him into a spinoff.
But to me, with Giorgio, I'd prefer to stick her with the Discovery cast and let's just keep on going. It's kind of like during Picard's first season on the air, a lot of people, including us, were going, well, obviously we're going to get a Seven of Nine spinoff.
Yeah.
But like now, if Seven is going to be part of the Picard crew, I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
Like, stick with that. I'm good. I don't need a Seven of Nine standalone series if she's locked into appearing in Picard going forward.
What does Star Trek Elnor look like to you, Cam?
It's a very short run.
Okay. It ends with one other nun slicing his head off very quickly.
The series runs just slightly shorter than The Cage.
Okay. I would watch that just for the fun of it, I guess, there. So, yeah, no Section 31 news. We did get a little, some tidbits from Discovery, like nothing really spoiler heavy. Again, it's a lot of actors talking about how, you know, they can't wait to see where their characters go next. But it sounds as if maybe we'll get to see the Kelpians in a whole new light. And I think we got hints of that, in the season two finale. So if you jump forward in time, you know, 900 plus years, I'm fascinated by what, you know, Kelpian life is like by then and how it stands in contrast to one Saru by then.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. I mean, when Serana shows up, you know, at the end of season two in a ship, that is going to right there show that things can change a lot for that society very quickly. So who knows what's happening by the time we, you know, pop back in with Discovery.
Well, who knows? Maybe we find out Kelpians have a 1,000-year lifespan and they never knew that because they were kind of the prey on their planet for all those generations.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we could have Serana back again. Who knows? So.
I do wonder when we're getting Discovery because they didn't drop any trailers or scenes or anything like that. I'm just very curious if they even know at the moment when they can drop this show.
Okay. So like, if we're being totally honest to listeners, we're recording this, Thursday evening on July 23rd. The Discovery table read, it's going to drop in its entirety on Friday. Who knows? They might have more news to share in that full table read. There might be a trailer. There might be a release date. Why they wouldn't do that during the official Comic-Con thing when they could probably get more, you know, I don't know, news value? I don't know. But just in case. Because Cam, whenever there's Star Trek news, they always like to drop it as soon as we finish recording something.
Yeah, well, that's also true. I mean, I guess the only reason to hold on to it a day, if they did indeed drop it one day later, would be to give Star Trek Prodigy the news value of the name of that show. But I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, well, okay, we've got all that out of the way. We can go to Odo, and it is kind of timely, though, because there was actually, like, an IDW Odo comic released this month. It's called Too Long a Sacrifice, and it's, you know, Odo playing detective on board Deep Space Nine during the Dominion War. I think that's, like, kind of a great topic for, you know, these writers to play around in, and it gets us thinking about, you know, how different is Odo in season one all the way through season seven, where we end his journey. And I think what we want to do, Cam, for listeners, is we're going to go season by season, highlight some of the big episodes for Odo and what that signified about his character growth, where it was bringing his arc, and I think how he informed the mythology of Deep Space Nine, perhaps more than any other character other than one Sisko.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we kick it off? Season one, you know, can I just jump right over to Vortex? Like, that's the one where, you know, you have the first rumblings that there's, you know, shapeshifters on the other side of the wormhole. You've got the guy who's got, like, that morphine key, and Odo wonders if, like, this kind of high-tech key could be the key to his own, you know, mystery. Because Odo, as we know him, he never really had, like, any of backstory that he really knew of entering into the series.
Yeah, and this relationship he has with this character, Croden, in this episode is very interesting in that, you know, a lot of the time we're unsure if Croden's even telling the truth. But it also, I remember watching this episode, you know, many years ago, and in my mind just thinking, I feel like this entire series is Odo just going to be led on various, you know, plot threads of, is this my home? No, it's not. And just kind of be this character who's always looking for a home throughout the course of the series. And I mean, obviously that's not what I got, but this episode, it's fine. You can feel the need in him to find his home in this episode, and the ambiguity at the end of him being given the shape-shifting locket and thinking, well, we'll see where we go from here. But we would get so much better episodes delving into Odo's search for his origins going forward. But this is a not bad early stab and a pretty shaky first season.
Yeah, it's okay. One thing, Cam, I think you gave this to me. I think, did you not give me the Making of Star Trek Deep Space Nine book? Like, maybe for my birthday or something? Maybe you picked it up at one of the conventions? Does that ring a bell to you?
Yeah, I believe that is true, yeah.
Okay, so I've flipped to page 85 here. And it actually has the Deep Space Nine Bible character descriptions of each one. Maybe I should have done this right at, you know, the start of our discussion, but why don't I just read Odo's description here? He was discovered in the Denorius asteroid belt 50 years earlier in a mysterious spacecraft with no memory of who he was or where he came from. In the beginning, he was treated as an elephant man, doing tricks such as shifting into a chair or a pencil, until he realized he would have to take on a humanoid form in order to function in Bajoran society. As a result, Odo performs a uniquely important role in the ensemble. He is a character who explores and comments on human values. And because he is forced to pass as one of us, his point of view usually comes with a cynical and critical edge. The way he figures it, laws change, justice is justice. This puts him into the conflict with Commander, who tells him he can't take the law into his own hands if he wants to stay on Deep Space Nine. Ro finds his negative attitude towards authority delightful, and they have a Bajoran fellowship. Once every day, he must return to his gelatinous form. So, of course, the reference to Ro is when she was still supposed to be what turned out to be the Kara figure. But I do like the fact that he's obsessed with justice. And I think that is, like, a common thread that you kind of can follow with Odo throughout this. But, you know, they had the mystery in mind early indeed, but I don't think they necessarily knew that he was going to be kind of the species that founded this Dominion that had not even popped up yet.
I doubt it. It seems highly unlikely they would have. But, you know, I will say, right out of the gate in Emissary, the character feels very well defined, which some characters we see throughout the course of Star Trek, you know, the first season, they're maybe a little shaky getting to where they become the characters we really know and embrace. Like, for example, Bashir is pretty shaky in early DS9 compared to the Bashir we get by the end of the show. And Odo doesn't seem to have those problems. He's defined very well, right in Emissary onwards.
Yeah. Anything else in season one we want to touch on, or do we want to jump over to season two?
Just a very super brief mention of the episode The Forsaken, where we get the first pairing of Odo and Loaxana, which is an episode, you know, they're trapped in a turbo lift, which I actually kind of enjoy because of how it is our first real glimpse at sort of the vulnerability of Odo and that yearning for a connection. And I like that they took Loaxana, and actually tried to do something with that character versus just camping it up.
Again, a very shaky season one. I think we need to jump over to season two because there's a very important episode, maybe two important episodes here. But first up, Necessary Evil, where we get kind of those murder flashbacks to Tarak Nor. And what this really reveals is Odo doing his first investigation in the employ of the Cardassians, and he starts to encounter Kira for the first time. By the time we get to this episode, we know that Odo is kind of covering Kira's tracks. And I think this is, for me, first time I watched it, I was like, oh, Odo loves Kira. And that really informs, you know, his motivation throughout much of the series. You know, obviously, the key thing for him is his desire to go home one day. But I think Kira is definitely up there, like kind of a 1A for him in this regard.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, you know, when you were reading your description of Odo from the making of Deep Space Nine, and we're talking about the found in a spaceship of mysterious origin, I was thinking of Superman. And in many ways, Kira is Odo's kryptonite. You know, he is a guy who will stick to justice, but it's like that is the one crack he really has that can be exploited is his relationship with Kira.
Yeah. So the next one I want to touch on, and I think this is very important too, but is the alternate. And that's the introduction of Dr. Mora, you know, essentially Odo's father figure in this. And of course, Deep Space Nine, you got to deal with daddy issues at one point. But it's just interesting. I think we both really like and delight in Dr. Mora. He's a very charismatic kind of figure, and he's pretty much the opposite of who Odo is. And you see this resentment that Odo has because Dr. Mora didn't understand that Odo was a sentient being when they first started experimenting on him. So they might be zapping him, you know, give him electric shocks or what have you. Odo resents that. You understand why, but you can also kind of understand why Dr. Mora didn't necessarily know what he was doing at that point.
Yeah, I always had so much sympathy with Dr. Mora, and that you get the sense he always kind of wanted to do what was best, but what was best was obviously, in the eyes of Odo, quite hurtful. And so I love that how much of, this is not another great episode, the alternate, it's more notable for the first appearance of Dr. Mora, but I love how it delves into the conflicted feelings they have for one another, and how, you know, when this episode comes to a conclusion, we have Dr. Mora walking with an understanding of how he's impacted Odo, but Odo also having an understanding of what Dr. Mora was trying to do. It's, you know, it's not just a kind of messy daddy issue episode. I mean, it is a little bit of that, but it has two characters learning from the experience and growing, and that will impact their relationship going forward.
Anything else in season two you want to highlight before I think we start to jump into the meat of the bones here?
Not really. The only note I made was in the episode Tribunal, where Odo's defending O'Brien, I just really enjoyed seeing him show like a real mastery of Cardassian law, because so often with a character like Odo, we look at him on Deep Space Nine and go, he knows everything we need to know about the law of DS9 and that world. But I like that we get to see him sort of excel in a different arena. But yeah. Moving forward,
I think the next very, very significant Odo episode has to be The Search Parts 1 and 2, where he actually arrives at the Changeling Lake, the Great Link, for the first time. And we as the audience realize that the Founders and the Changelings are one and the same. And Odo really has to come to grips with his loyalty to his crew and loyalty to a species that, well, how far is the connection beyond genetics, you know? And so it's kind of the introduction of the female changeling who turns into a very notable antagonist moving forward. But I think this is really where the mythology of Deep Space Nine really starts to solidify here. No pun intended.
And also, this really does set up the entire concept of the Great Link, which is one of those things as a sci-fi premise could have been made so convoluted and confusing, and how it pertains to all of these different life forms and their, you know, their impact on creating the Dominion, all that sort of thing. And DS9 gets this information across so simply and cleverly that it's really a credit to the show's writers, because, I mean, dude, we've seen so many Star Trek episodes with a relatively simple premise that they are like bending over backwards to try to explain. Look at like The Royale.
I still don't want to look at The Royale, Cam. do not force me to do that.
But you know what I'm talking about.
They didn't even know what they were doing in that one.
No, they didn't. The characters even acknowledge as much at the end of the episode. But so often in not just Star Trek, in sci-fi storytelling, it's very difficult to explain a very complex premise, but this episode does a fantastic job. And not only does it explain really all the setup we need to continue us through right to the end of the show in terms of the changelings and Odo, but it does it in a really satisfying story that also has genuinely emotional moments involving Odo reuniting with his people and walking away basically alone in some ways.
Yeah. And it makes him realize, like, well, he is a god to some. And I think that's very important when we get to the abandoned. And that's where they discover an alien baby in this wreckage. And as this baby seems to grow at a very, very fast rate, they realize it's, in fact, a Jem'Hadar soldier. And a Jem'Hadar soldier who is just genetically programmed to regard Odo as god. I think seeing Odo in the father role, it's actually interesting, as we were just talking about the alternate, where he had that resentment for his father, and for him to try to figure out how to take care of what is essentially a killing machine that desires only to destroy. Like, it puts Odo in a very interesting position, and also fits in within the mythology.
But also, when Dr. Mora was a quote-unquote parent to, you know, young Odo, he didn't really know what he was dealing with. And now we have a case of Odo parenting another life form that he doesn't really know what to do with. Like, that's the interesting thing, is like, it's not a case of, you know, Odo raising another changeling, for example. We get that later. But here, if he'd been doing it, he would have more of a sense of how to parent this thing versus what we get here, which is so similar to the Dr. Mora story.
Yeah. Kim, another one, I alluded to it early on, though, is Heart of Stone.
Yeah.
And I think this is important for those that might not recall. It's where Kira and Odo, they are land on a planet, and a rock starts to envelop Kira throughout. it's a kind of a dopey premise, and I don't know if the production values ever held up, even at the time. But I think this is a very significant one, though, in that the founders figure out what's keeping Odo from wanting to join them. And that is his attachment to Kira, because he admits as much to what he thinks is Kira, but is in fact the female changeling.
Yeah, I always love this reveal of his feelings for Kira. But I am curious, when you first saw this episode, I don't know if you remember, but how quickly did you realize it wasn't Kira and that it was the changeling?
Like, honestly, not until the VFX started and we saw her morph into the female changeling.
Yeah, same here. And I think that's a sign that, you know, we can say the VFX maybe haven't held up great or the production values, but this episode had me completely fooled.
Oh, me too. I was a total sucker for it. But you know what? Like, I was watching this episode, I think I was maybe like 10 or something like that, maybe 11. And for me, the idea of having to watch somebody, I hate movies that deal with plagues or like sicknesses, and you just watch people wither away. Although I think Contagion was a fantastic film, because it takes agency away from the characters. And me watching Kira stuck in a rock, I wasn't excited about that episode, but you have that twist. And then every time I rewatch that episode, I actually am far more engaged with it because I'm paying way more attention to the character stuff that's going on here. And it's very important character stuff about the dynamics that exist between Kira and Odo.
It is a very tough premise to pull off in a way that's very compelling. I mean, 127 hours obviously did that, the film. But I always really got into this episode. I remember watching it and being so drawn into the emotional journey between Odo and fake Kira that I was genuinely shocked when, kind of after the fact, I went on IMDb and saw that it was actually not rated particularly highly.
Yeah, and I think if I just watched it once, maybe I wouldn't have rated it as highly. I think that it's a slower episode, even for Deep Space Nine. I just think that people should go back and give it another watch. Like, I give it my full blessing. Not that that means anything.
I mean, being the guy who's argued for more episodes where characters just sit in a shuttle and talk for an hour,
yeah,
I guess exactly. The fact that it was slow didn't impact me in any way, shape, or form.
Cam, you mentioned 127 hours. You don't have to, but would you like to share your April Fool's story with our listeners?
You know what? I'm going to let you do that because I think it tickles you more than me.
So back when you and I were in school together, you turned to me on April 1st and you're like, Tyler, look at this news story. And I turn to your computer monitor, and it says, director's cut of 127 hours will be a full 127 hours long, spread across 12 Blu-ray discs. And you're like, can you believe that they're doing that? And I looked at you, and I was like, no, Cam, I can't. It's April Fool's Day. And then you said, I don't know. It's possible. You argued with me about that. It took you a few minutes to come around.
I guess I was just very hopeful. That was my favorite movie of that year. So.
It was a great movie. I would recommend that one. So
I guess I'm saying that I would totally be down to watch Danny Boyle shoot a movie that's 127 hours.
How many sittings would it take you, do you think?
Oh, well, okay. So like when I watched Showa, I did it over three nights, and that's a 10-hour movie. So it would take a long time.
Let's do the math there. You're looking about at least 4 months if you're going to do 3 hours a night, right?
Yeah, about that.
All right. So have fun with that 12-disc director's cut that you're looking forward to. All right. Cam, anything else in season three that you wanted to touch on before you jump over to season four?
I would say that like the relationship between Garrick Odo is really fascinating in the Improbable Cause Dias Cast two-parter. Yeah. And just the idea of the Romulan Cardassian attack fleet heading towards the Founders is interesting in the sense of sort of that building tension of the threat of the Founders. The other thing that I would mention is the episode, The Adversary, which isn't really an Odo-centric episode, but has a key event that will very much shape that character's destiny, which is him killing the other changeling by pushing it into a warp core. And that will obviously...
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, that will pay off big going forward. But when you are kind of going through the list of episodes, you don't necessarily look at The Adversary as the big character-defining, you know, episode for Odo.
But the thing is, like, after that episode, every time he encounters the female changeling, she keeps reemphasizing to him, you know, no changeling has ever harmed another. And that really sticks with you moving forward with Odo's journey.
Yeah. And I wonder if that was taken a little bit from Planet of the Apes with the ape no kill ape kind of thing. I'd like to think so. I like to think, you know, great science fiction looks back at the science fiction that came before it. But it is a really
Odo,
great
no kill Odo.
But I really did like this because it's such a simple thing. Just Odo, and we've seen obviously, you know, Worf kill other Klingons or Garrick kill other Cardassians or anything like that. But the idea that this one act, this one killing of another changeling, will color the way this character is treated in changeling society throughout the rest of the series, I think is really powerful.
Yeah. So why don't we jump over to season four? I'm going to briefly just touch on this one. Crossfire. We have Odo kind of protecting Shakar. I only bring it up because this to me was one of those memorable like Odo VFX shots where they have the malfunctioning turbo lift and Odo has to like use his arms to stop the turbo lift from going down the shaft and killing Kira and Shakar. I just wanted to bring that up because for me, it was a seminal moment in how badass Odo can be.
It is. It's also a seminal moment, though, in the increasing emotional tension regarding the Odo-Kira relationship. And I know it's interesting that the actors have both said, you know, they weren't really in favor of this being a romance, but boy, does it seem like the show is aiming that way early on.
Oh, yeah. They know it, you know. And I feel bad for, you know, Odo and that he's just got to be kind of the nice guy that stands back and he knows he just doesn't have what his love interest is looking for, at least at that moment there.
Aren't you so thankful, though, that in a 1990s television show, they played him as a nice guy that has aged very well versus one that's like sabotaging Shakar or something?
The toxic masculinity that seems to be so pervasive once you actually step back and look at it nowadays.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm very thankful that they didn't compromise that character unknowingly in, you know, the 90s.
Although I do want to acknowledge there is that other end of toxic masculinity where people are like, or dudes are just like, I'm just a nice guy. How dare she not like me? And like, that's another thing where it's that kind of feeling of entitlement. And so I only want to acknowledge that, and that I think mm-hmm. you and I understand the other side of the spectrum there. But jumping over to maybe Homefront and Paradise Lost, that's, you know, mostly like kind of a Ben Sisko sort of episode, but it is where Odo is actively trying to help the Federation overcome the threat of the Dominion by implementing new security measures. And it's also where Section 31 decides to infect him with the changeling killing disease. It lies dormant for a number of years until he's able to rejoin the Great Link and infect them.
Yeah, it's always funny touching on this two-parter as key in the development of Odo, considering that particular event really isn't acknowledged till quite a bit later.
It's a little retconning, you know.
It is retconning, so it's always like, wait, do we talk about this two-parter as a key moment in his evolution? But it is. The events of this episode are. And I do like how this really does dovetail off of, you know, the adversary, where he's killed one of his own. And so now he is working with Starfleet against his own people. And I love this push and pull of Odo being drawn back home, but then joining up with Starfleet, and the back and forth, and how this really does pull on the character's soul.
Yeah, it's a solid kind of showcase of about his continued divided loyalties going forward. Next up, I'll touch on Broken Link, and if there's other season four ones that you want to hit on, I just think Broken Link is a very important one, because this is where Odo must go be judged for harming another changeling, the only one to do so, and the changelings decide to turn him into a solid. Once again, to me, watching this, I was like, oh, crap. Like, what are they going to do with the character moving forward? But you also get that kind of tidbits that made us really anticipate where we'd go after that, because he revealed that Gowron, like, one of the things that he found out within the Great Link was that Gowron was, in fact, a changeling as well. We'd find out that that was more just obfuscation on the part of the changelings. But, a pretty solid finale. But what do you think it adds to his character arc as well, Cam?
Well, I mean, the taking away of the abilities is so big with Odo. And once again, we go back to Superman. It's like Superman 2. Odo is entering his Superman 2 season. But what that means psychologically to this character, who's always struggled with defining who he is, you're now just throwing an extra wrench in this. You're now taking away the one thing he kind of understood about himself and making him like the people he's been amongst and felt like an outsider with. So it just is going to make this character, I mean, Odo is like basically an exposed nerve of a character. Like, everything about him, you can tell it gets to him. Like, things bother him, and this character never feels comfortable. And this episode, while maybe small for a season finale when it comes to Star Trek season finales, really does promise huge ramifications for the character going forward.
Yeah. Any other season four episodes I may have glossed over just now?
I didn't really have anything. Season four, actually, I was surprised didn't have more big Odo episodes, especially coming off the previous season with The Search.
Yeah, Cam, there's a reason why I mentioned Crossfire. Not a lot to pick from in season four.
Yeah, really curious. I wonder why.
I want to jump over season five, because there's a very important episode to me. You know, it's the one two-hander that we get between Quark and Odo. You know, this is the ascent. This is where they crash land on a planet, and they have to take a subspace transmitter up to the peak of this mountain to get a message out there. And it really solidifies the Quark and Odo dynamic.
You're loving that word, solidify.
I'll start saying cement from moving forward. But, you know, it's weird, because it's not love. It's not respect, but it's something. It's an affection, and it goes beyond just tolerance. Like, they care for each other. And after the Odo and Kira stuff, to me, I think the Odo Quark stuff is the most important relationship that he ever forms on board the station.
How would you regard Odo's other, like, platonic friendships? Because the Kira one obviously is very loaded down emotionally between, you know, the two of them. But what do you think of his other, like, friendships?
Because does he Odo, have any? Like,
I was going to say that, yeah.
Maybe he's got a dynamic with Garak.
Yeah.
You know.
But would you say they're friends?
Nope. And I wouldn't say that he's friends with Ben or you know, O'Brien or Bashir or Jadzia or Ezri, you know?
Worf is
the closest thing that he has to a friend.
Yeah, I mean, he does hang out with Worf, but it's only when they're with Kira and Dax. So I don't think he'd be hanging out with Worf otherwise.
I don't think Worf would be hanging out if Jadzia hadn't insisted on it either.
Yeah, that's very true. So I do think Quark is the closest thing Odo has to like a platonic friend.
So what is Quark's closest thing to a friend? Is it Rom or is it perhaps Odo?
Do you think it's Jadzia?
It could be. We get so many more Quark and Odo moments, but I don't know. It's Jadzia, because at least they do Domjot nights, you know?
Yeah. So. I mean, I would say like Rom, kind of, but he's his brother. So that I'm trying to stay away from family connections.
Yeah.
And outside of that, I'd say it's either Jadzia or it's Odo. It's probably one or the other.
One of the moments I do love, and I'm forgetting the exact episode, but remember where like Jake was just hanging out on the promenade, Odo's walking by, and Jake thinks that he has to go away, and then Odo's like, no, I was never shooing you away. I was shooing Nog away because he was going to be making trouble. Like, that was a nice moment between those two characters.
That was, yeah. And, this relationship that, getting back to the Ascent, you know, I love that we did get at least one episode that really did basically cement their relationship. I'm going to steal your cement there. and also touch on the anger and resentment of the relationship too, because it's like these two characters, they definitely have a byplay that they enjoy kind of poking and prodding at one another. But there's also like an anger that comes from both of them. With Odo, I think it's really tied to justice, right? Like he really does, you know, find Quark's behavior reprehensible. And Quark, on the flip side, really can't stand do-gooder Odo in those sort of tendencies. So it's like it all comes together in two guys who kind of, they're both outsiders on the station. I mean, there's a lot of outsiders on Deep Space Nine, but these two really are outsiders. And there is a connection there, and I think a shared sort of cynicism, but
yeah, for sure.
They are on such opposite sides of the lawn. That's the struggle.
We had already talked about this moment a couple weeks ago, but I'd be remiss if I just did not bring up the fact that Odo in solid form breaks his leg on this planet and Quark decides to carry him up the mountain. And Odo's like, why? He's like, so I can eat you when you die. I love that moment so much, you know. So, the next one, I think this is a really underrated episode, but The Begotten. This is where we find an infant changeling, and it's clearly very sick. And Odo finally has to call on Dr. Mora for help again in this situation. Watching Rene Auberjonnais act with such emotion against, you know, some gelatinous goop, it's just fascinating. You feel it. Like, it tells you this is a man who can do a one-man show quite easily. And I don't know if Rene Auberjonnais got enough props for the dynamism that he introduced a character who is often seen as gruff, and you could say would sometimes come off as, you know, one note. I think this proves, like, what a great actor Rene Auberjonnais is, though.
Well, that infant changeling doesn't come to life because of the effects team. It comes to life because of the performances of, you know, both actors, Dr. Moore and Odo, like the two characters bouncing off and dealing with this life form. That's what gives it a personality and the real tragedy that we get walking away from that episode when it dies.
Well, passes powers onto Odo, so he's back into his, you know, gelatinous capabilities once again. Not with the AOK from the Great Link, though, which is interesting. It's not like the Great Link forgave him for that, and I don't exactly understand how the physics of that works. Could this changeling have gone into, say, Quark's body, and Quark could have gotten some sort of superpowers?
He becomes like Mr. Fantastic from the Fantastic Four.
Stretch Armstrong, perhaps?
Yeah.
I don't know. Does it also imply that Odo could go to people and he can be absorbed into them and suddenly, I don't know, like Nog is walking around with like shape-shifting powers? I don't know. I didn't understand the physics of it, but it was a beautiful moment. That's why it's called suspension of disbelief in fiction.
Was this a missed opportunity for a Deep Space Nine episode where Odo, quote-unquote, infected another character who became a shapeshifter?
Does it become too gimmicky?
Maybe. I'm thinking it's a lighter episode. It's not like a, you know, dark and serious DS9 episode.
Who would they...
It's got to be Quark, right?
Quark. I'd say Quark, because Quark would misuse the powers more than anyone else. Maybe Garak, but I think it'd be great if it was Quark.
Yeah, I think that could have been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Cam, another kind of underrated one that I would call like a hidden gem, though, very important, though, is Children of Time. This is where Deep Space Nine is kind of trapped in this atmosphere of a planet, and they discover a double of the Defiant was sent to crash land on this planet, and they're essentially interacting with their ancestors over hundreds of years. And Odo, well, he's still jumping along. He's got a different look to him because his shape-shifting abilities have improved. And the future Odo goes up to Kira and says, I wanted to tell you this hundreds of years ago, but I'm in love with you. Odo, quote-unquote Odo, reveals his feelings to Kira. I think this is a very, very important one in Odo's journey, and it might get overlooked by some fans.
I am shocked how rarely I see this episode brought up, for example, on the Star Trek Facebook groups. It does seem like it's one that kind of slips through the cracks, but it's so important to the emotional journey of Odo.
It's also just, for me, it's a great high concept episode as well. I'll just go on a slight tangent, but just seeing like kind of the Klingon culture evolve and some people, they might not be Klingons genetically, but they want to go off to the Klingon colony that Worf apparently founded with Jadzia and kind of live out their days there. Like there's so much world building that goes on to this, but I think the backbone of everything is what Odo gives to Kira. And is it a bit of a violation though? Like Odo, the present day Odo is thrust into this situation and you can tell that he resents it, but I think he actually kind of did the right thing for, you know, his own emotional journey, because I don't think he would have been willing to acknowledge these feelings as we see in Crossfire just a season earlier.
Well, yeah, I think it is the alternate Odo knowing that he can't. Like, he knows his other self is unable to and desperately wants to. So he's almost, in a way, doing him a favor.
Yeah. Just brief one. I just want to mention A Simple Investigation in which he's kind of investigating the woman with potential ties to Orion syndicates. It was just kind of a fun noir one. I like it when we get to watch Odo play detective. It's a solid Odo episode. I don't know how much it adds to his journey, other than I guess this is his first real love interest, though.
Yeah, it shows Odo's first explorations of sexuality, which we would actually get more of as the series progressed. He's really the only Star Trek character that's a thing, right?
I'm trying to think. I don't ever want to know what went on with Neelix and Cass. It's just, you know, leave that
sure. A little out of touch. That's you would get kind of winking stuff, I guess, that was always kind of weird and problematic with the Worf Jadzia stuff and, you know, Quark and Grilka sort of stuff. But, like, the Odo one was dealt with seriously. Like, it wasn't played as comedy. Like, it was genuinely a character exploring sexuality in a way we'd never really seen in Star Trek. And yeah, this episode is a good example of that. The only other episode I was going to reference was actually just the premiere, Apocalypse Rising, where we just see Odo's emotional reactions to being a solid, and it's just sort of carried through that episode. It's not an Odo-centric episode, but you really get a sense of him at his lowest.
You might say that he's uncomfortable in his own skin.
One could.
Yeah. Jumping to season six. If you go to the Dominion War arc, I want to highlight Behind the Lines, because this is when the female changeling reappears on the station and reunites with Odo. This is the first time that they've interacted since the Great Link turned him solid. You can tell there's a lot of tension there, but they eventually, you know, start melding with one another.
Yeah, they do. I remember when we reviewed this episode or this group of episodes from the DS9 Dominion War arc with Dave Boris. He came on. I'll post a link to that episode in the show notes. That's one of my favorite episodes we've ever done. But I remember we were frustrated at the time in that Odo felt kind of on the sidelines throughout so much of this arc.
Yeah.
But you get a sense of just how conflicted Odo is and how he's kind of stuck. You know, we've seen him kind of vacillate back and forth between wanting to, you know, help and align with his people versus being pulled back in the other direction. And we kind of see in this episode, he's stuck right in the center in a room with the female changeling and he can't go anywhere. It's almost like a drug in a way of him, you know, becoming addicted to this connection to the Great Link. And it really does, you know, underline the conflict at the heart of Odo, even if it's not necessarily the most riveting television in terms of the evolution of the character.
I did find it frustrating because it's as if he does lose his agency to a certain degree. And it's also, we're seeing him behave in a way that it's not why we like the character in the first place, in which he disregards human life or war. He's just like, you know what, that's not really important to me. It's like, what's important is reconnecting with my species. And it fundamentally changes the Kira and Odo dynamic for a big chunk of season six, though, because she just doesn't trust him anymore, and rightfully so, even though he comes through in the end.
Yeah, and I'm okay with it in the larger picture because, I mean, let's face it, we'll get to it in a few minutes, but they wrap up the character so well and the journey so well carried through the series that I can kind of make peace with this sort of messy period of Odo's existence, because obviously he is such in a state of confusion that I'm okay with him kind of being just stuck for a while.
Going next, though, is this the ultimate go-to Odo episode? Is his way, you know, maybe not in the mythology of the Dominion and all that, but is this kind of the peak of Odo's character developments in which he finally starts a relationship with Kira with the help of Vic Fontaine?
Well, I mean, I would always argue his ultimate episode is when he becomes an umpire in Take Me Out to the Holosuite.
Yes. Fair enough. That is his peak right there.
That's peak Odo.
Actually, no. You just said that because you're hoping he's going to get to first base with Kira.
Safe. Yeah, His Way is just such a wonderful episode. And I always like when they can take a character who does not lend themselves to a certain type of story and somehow make all of that work. You know, whether it's, say, Quark in like a really dark episode, I really enjoy those, just as I enjoy seeing Odo in a very light romantic comedy episode that, you know, the actors, once again, may not have been fans of the Odo-Kira, you know, relationship, but boy, is it like fireworks when those two are like kissing in the promenade at the end.
Should this episode have worked? It's got so much going against it, where it's like a holographic lounge singer who, like, when I first heard this is what they're going to do, I had zero interest in it, but I just don't know how they pulled it off. But maybe it's props to the creators of the show for being able to do this.
Yeah, they didn't play it safe, and I'm totally down with that, and I love that they pulled it off.
What would be the equivalent on Voyager? Is it Fairhaven?
Well, nothing significant happens in those episodes, really. I'm trying to think of a Voyager episode where something significant happens with a character that's dealt with in a way that's not expected.
Not just them going wild, I guess, like that full swing for the fences. Maybe the Captain Proton episodes, that is pretty wild for them to be willing to do like all this extended black and white sequences on network television in the 1990s, props to them.
Well, definitely. Yeah. No, I agree with you in terms of format. Yeah. In terms of character, no, but in terms of format for what the show is for that hour. Yeah. You're probably right on that one.
Okay. Cam, any big, Odo developments in season six that you want to highlight before we jump to the final season?
No, I think I'm good to jump to season seven.
Yeah, so with season seven, this is actually Treachery, Faith in the Great River. I really like this one. I think it's also another underrated one. I think it's actually telling that you're generally getting like pretty strong episodes with Odo, and they often do go underrated. But it's essentially Odo and one of the Weyoun clones on a road trip. And I love road trip episodes. And it's really great where it's Odo is still trying to deal with the whole godlike persona that so many of these pre-programmed species, cast upon him. And he's willing to see that this Weyoun clone is willing to die for him. And I think that really makes things, get a little closer to home. But I think this is a solid, solid Odo outing. How much it adds to his overall arc that has big impacts later on, not so much, but I think it still shows us, how he's still having a difficult time wrapping his head around his duties as part of a member of the founders.
There's a really interesting parallel story going on in DS9 between Sisko and Odo, both these characters who are seen as, you know, basically gods to a group of people and how they deal with it.
Whereas I know what it's like.
Whereas like Sisko somewhat embraces it in some ways. Odo does not. Odo is greatly uncomfortable with the entire situation. And I do love this episode, and we have that moment with Wayun 6 dying and Odo basically blessing him on his way out. And then, you know, walking away from that situation, still not very comfortable with what he's just done.
I want to jump quickly over to Chimera, because this is where we have Las, the other infant changeling that was kind of growing up in parallel to Odo, although I think he had more time to develop his skills to the point where apparently changelings can travel at warp speed as essentially, you know, those space whales that we saw on Discovery. That aside, I think this is actually a really, really good episode for another underrated one, because it's showing what Odo could have been like. And it ain't so pretty here. And Las has such disregard for all things that are not changeling. And Odo has that sense of justice, which kind of, to a certain degree, seems to be lost on Las.
Yeah, and also it really does highlight with Odo of how much his, you know, personal relationships have changed his perspective as a changeling. Because Las, he may have wound up exactly like Odo had he, you know, been brought up on the station and gone through the experiences Odo had. It's very much a nature versus nurture in some ways story. And yeah, like I am very curious what Odo's like if he doesn't have the experiences on the station that he had.
One of the other things that I just found fascinating, you get the sense when he is, you know, getting into the Great Link or he's joining with the female changeling, that it's a very intimate act. It's a very sensual, if not almost our equivalent of sexual act, and that he joins with Las in this. And of course, you know, you're back in the late 90s. These are two male actors that are joining together in what is very much implied to be kind of a very intimate sort of act here. And I just thought it was interesting that, you know, for all of the lack of LGBTQ representation that we saw in Star Trek at the time, they were willing to, you know, go somewhere with some of those boundaries that they may have faced. But even Ira Steven Baer will be the first to admit that they didn't push it enough as they should have.
Yeah, although this was a really interesting way to try to work that in. I mean, this goes back to the foundations of genre entertainment, which is a term usually they say smuggling, where you could take, you know, concepts that maybe society is uncomfortable with in their art and smuggle it into genre storytelling in a form that allows them to watch it and enjoy it and maybe even walk away with the message from it. And this episode is a solid example and one that it is not usually regarded for that. It's an episode that I think people remember it more, honestly, for the love scene that he has with Kira at the end. But I think that relationship with Kira and the love scene they have at the end of that is made that much more powerful by the experiences we've seen him have earlier in the episode and then in the episodes leading up to that as well.
Do you think any Star Trek fans out there have tried to role play that Odo-Kira love scene?
I am almost 100% positive they have.
There's got to be some video out there, right?
I'm not looking, but okay. I'm pretty sure there is. Okay, I have a question for you. What do you think ever became of Las?
I think he joined with Odo. He got the Section 31 disease, and I think he's dead right now, honestly.
Yeah, because, I mean, unless he managed to stumble home to the Great Link at some point.
How would he have done that?
Yeah, well, exactly. I think
because the wormhole was closed and the changelings were all at death's door. So I don't think he's got a shot.
Yeah, Las kind of goes the way of like a Roe, where their fate is never written, but the circumstances of the universe at that point in time kind of spells the end for them.
I feel so dumb right now because I'm usually kind of good with this, but did Las go through the other side of the wormhole at the end of Chimera? Or my memory is that he did not, is that he continued journeying around the Alpha Quadrant.
That's my memory as well, and he wanted Odo to go with him.
Right, okay. Yeah, Sorry, loss. It's a loss. So can we get into kind of the final chapter of Deep Space Nine here? It's like I said, like everything that we know of Odo, all his actions moving forward, they're informed by that. So I think what we get is not so much the character stuff as it is the action stuff, like the decisions he's willing to make during this war. And for a long time, we see him just getting sicker and sicker until he realizes he's got to go back to Deep Space Nine and try to get something going on with Bashir, cure-wise. So for me, ultimately, the next big highlight for Odo is the decisions he ultimately makes and what you leave behind.
Yeah, because he is sick for so long and then on the mend leading up to that. But yeah, what you leave behind is, boy, I mean, we've talked about that finale. I'll post a link in the show notes, but of all the journeys undertaken by the characters in that finale, I think the Odo one is the one that is just the powerhouse. Like, that is the one that I think we all remember is, you know, ultimately him saving the Great Link by rejoining it at the end, making that sacrifice. Although I don't know if it's a sacrifice for Odo as much. What do you think?
I don't think it is. I think he ultimately knows that's where he belongs. And he knows that he can one day leave and return to Kira, but he is saying goodbye to her permanently. And it is gut-wrenching there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of the great farewells in Star Trek. I don't know that there's a better one, honestly. The only one that would come close to me is the Spock and Kirk goodbye in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
What about when Trip Tucker is stuffed into the MRI machine with a smile on his face in These Are the Voyages, and that's the last we ever see of him?
What about Geordi saying goodbye to Data in Nemesis?
What about Jadzia? No, I don't even want to go there. No, nope. I don't even want to go there. Yeah, so the other thing to highlight in that episode, though, is Odo. To me, I thought this was a little rushed, but essentially Odo goes and joins with the female changeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's essentially, she's like, oh yeah, I guess I've seen the error of my ways. He's giving me the cure. Let's end this war right now. I was like, okay, but you know, at least you know that Odo had to be convincing enough. I don't think it was just the fact that he gave her the cure that did it all. I think she must have been persuaded in other ways too.
I think so, yeah. Although I kind of made peace with the fact that, like, I can accept that changelings they operate in a way that isn't the way that I operate. So, like, I would always kind of give them a lot of room in terms of...
Except for lovemaking, of course.
Of course. I'm always swirling around the room. Yeah. but yeah, that, like, the decisions they make and the way they would go about it would be very different than the way we would. So it gave the show a lot of leeway, at least in my eyes.
Yeah, yeah. Cam, like, it's the end of Odo's journey. I think he came to, like you said, like, one of the most conclusive ends and satisfying ends for a character arc, ultimately. Because it's not like, are tons of fans wondering, hey, whatever happened to Odo? Like, I think you can wonder that about, say, Bashir or O'Brien or definitely Sisko. I think we all have kind of very satisfying answers about what ultimately is likely Odo's fate, though.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, what I find it fascinating about this character is that for the characters of Star Trek, and I mean not just DS9, all of Star Trek, the journey is away from home. And Odo is operating in stark contrast to that, in that his journey is entirely going home. Hmm. He's not a character who wants to explore. And so the fate of this character moving forward, I guess it just makes sense that Odo's found where he's going. He's not looking to go out beyond, you know, he's not looking to go second star to the right and straight on till morning. He's a character who actually had a destination in mind and wound up there. And I'm okay with that. And I kind of like that it does close the book on this character. Now, that said, if they want to revisit Odo at any point in the future, I'm open to it.
Well, IDW, you're already doing Odo prequels. I guess we're waiting on you to do an Odo sequel at this point.
Well, and I mean, also in the documentary, What We Left Behind, of course, in their hypothetical season 8, they also had ways to work Odo back in. So it could be done. It's just, I feel that character in the world of Star Trek, if you leave him, he's one of the few where you don't go, what became of him? Because a lot of the others, you know, whether it's a Bashir, whether it's a Ezri, you know, you wonder what ship did they wind up on, or where did they transfer? Where did Worf go? Is he in the diplomatic corps? You know, all these characters have been bouncing around. We watch Picard and we're like, where's Riker and Troy now? Where's Picard? Where's Odo? I feel like I know where he is.
Yeah, he's making pizza on the Changeling homeworld.
Exactly. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next time?
Well, Cam, Lower Decks is coming in just a few weeks. We'll be doing week-to-week reviews, but I think we also need to touch on the fact that Lower Decks, it's all about second contacts. These are not the important sort of missions that are assigned. So we're going to go and look at all the kind of lame missions that Starfleet officers have been assigned over the years. I think this will be a fun one.
I think so too. Okay, so you can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam. V is in Vortex is the ultimate Odo episode ever. Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's R-E-P. P is in pizza with Odo on top beans. O-R-T-O-N.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Come fly with me. Come fly. Let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, come fly, let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's take off to Peru.
Transfer complete.